the more that we can help mature the entire field through community investment, we're going to benefit in a number of different ways. We're going to create better relationships between people who use our products and also people that don't. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if we do our jobs right and deliver value first to the community, we are, by consequence, going to put ourselves in a stronger position, not only for us to win, but for everybody in the field to win. And that's really interesting.
Are we recording?
Oh my God. Better Product, the only show that takes a behind-the-scenes look into how digital products are created,
the businesses built around them, and how you, too, can innovate better product. I'm Christian.
I'm Anna.
Welcome to today's show. In the last episode, we heard from several product leaders about the role community plays in the product development process in both expected and unexpected ways.
You got it, Christian.
Nailed it.
Personally, one of my favorite parts of our last show was hearing from Adam Fry Pierce, the director of design community and curator of the Design Leadership Forum at Envision. He talked about the three P's of community, and I think this concept speaks to the core of what we were hoping to learn about community and product.
Which is exactly why we invited Adam back on the show, along with Envision's VP of Partnerships and Community, Mike Davidson. We wanted to dig more into how those principles actually look when put into action.
First, let me tell you a bit more about Envision. Envision is a digital product design platform that puts an emphasis on community through efforts like the Design Leadership Forum and DesignBetter.co. According to Adam, many designers find themselves pushed in new directions that are outside of their traditional skill sets, and that's where their understanding of community comes into play.
And now in the current space where, you know, visual design's really become product design, the field seems pretty nascent, and a lot of people who are practicing or leading teams are asked now to deliver on things that require skills that they didn't necessarily go to school for, right? And so knowing that a lot of people are in these positions that they weren't fully formally educated on, the thing that's always stood out to me is the way that we can bypass some of the problems that happen when you don't go to a full four-year college for all the things that you're doing is just to connect with the other people in the community.
Connecting people with resources and each other is just one example of how Envision is approaching community. When Mike joined the company in 2018, after previously leading the design team at Twitter, he stepped into a role focused on expanding the definition of community. One way this manifests is by giving designers, whose voices have been typically marginalized or ignored, a platform to share their experiences.
If there's somebody who's got something important to say, but that doesn't necessarily have, you know, a platform that's, you know, 6 million users big as we do, we're happy to use our platform to direct it to the voices that aren't necessarily always represented in the typical places that you would look for them. People that don't necessarily have, you know, a million followers on Twitter or don't have popular design blogs, but nonetheless have very important things to say about accessibility and diversity and inclusion and subjects that are important to us and that are important to the world, but don't necessarily get the platform that they need.
And what about the third P, practice? Mike sees our design community as transforming typical work habits. We often want to keep our work hidden until we believe it's ready to be seen. But Envision's workflow encourages transparency and feedback throughout the design process, guided by the belief that the community will help improve the output of the individual's work.
We do, as a profession, historically have this proclivity to keeping our work close to ourselves and hidden until we think it's done. And that's the way I grew up, right? Like, I don't want to show my work until it's polished and I'm proud of it and I thought of every last thing. And then hopefully I can kind of like sneak it through without it getting watered down by anybody along the way. But that's not really the modern way to design. It's much more of a team sport, much more of an open process where you show your work early, you show your work often, you don't get too attached to your ideas because, frankly, there's a very good chance that you're wrong with your initial approaches.
And it's with this in mind that we bring Adam and Mike back on. In this conversation, we learn how they make this idea of people, platform, and practices a reality, and what they're learning from the design community, the community they're creating.
And as it turns out, their community is growing and evolving in unexpected and exciting ways. So for the team at Envision, community means creating a better product while also creating a stronger community for designers everywhere.
Could you mentioned the three P's and you talked about people, platform, and practice. Could you talk a little bit more about the three P's and kind of what role they play in the company?
So the people, platform, and practices is really just this, it's a way of putting a lens over how the industry operates, right? At the center of everything that goes on in product design. You have people that are involved, whether it's internal partnerships or partnerships at all, leading people, hiring people, everything that comes along with people, which is the people deliverables, right? And people management. And then platform is often the tools or the things that are used to deliver the goods. And then the practices are, you know, how you end up building it. Aaron Walter shared a great analogy on this once, and it had to do with carpentry. You know, he said the hammer is essentially the platform. The practices is how to use it, and the people are the team of carpenters that end up building the house.
Love a good house analogy. No, definitely. Yeah. That's our favorite analogy as well. We put everything into a house.
I can't use a house to explain something, then I just don't understand it. So no, that's great.
I have a follow-up question from something we were talking about a little bit earlier about community. I think one of you mentioned that, I think Mike, I think it was you, that there's this idea that designers are always trying to improve themselves. They're always trying to be on the cutting edge. You know, do I need to learn something else? Do I need to see this new tool? I can imagine that the intensity of the community is such a great kind of place to be, that they're excited, they're always learning, they're always growing. But I can imagine it's also a scary place to be with a product. You know, if people are so willing to embrace something that's new, are they going to be potentially willing to embrace a disruptor in your space? So how do you kind of manage the veracity of the new with this community, but at the same time kind of keep them involved in what Envision is doing?
Yeah, I think that's a really astute observation. And I also think it's a fantastic thing. Like, I grew up in the 90s. I started my career in the 1990s. And there was one company that I was able to use that produced design tools that helped me be a designer. And I loved it at the time. I really loved those tools. And they helped me, build the career that I've been able to build. But there were no alternatives. It was essentially you were using this company's products and that was it. And thankfully, they make good products, so it wasn't a problem. But, you know, as we now work in many, many different types of modalities, we need different tools that do different things. And it's a scary thought, depending on one company, to provide all of those tools for all of a designer's needs. And so I like living in a world where designers have a choice of what tools to use. They can use Envision, they can use Adobe, they can use Figma, they can use Sketch, they can use any number of other tools, depending on what suits them best. And so, you know, you could say, well, as a company that has a popular tool, doesn't that make you nervous? And I would say no, because I feel like we are a company that has a pretty good beat on, you know, where the industry is going and a pretty good ability to deliver on those tools. And so as a designer, you know, my philosophy has always been, you know, let the best tool win, or let the best short list of tools win. So I love living in a world in which designers are free to use whatever tool suits them best. And it kind of puts the onus on all of us working at design tool companies to produce that best tool.
So I want to talk a little bit more about the designbetter.co, the community. How does Design Better kind of connect with the larger Envision product suite?
So this kind of goes back to the three P's that we were talking about earlier, right? The people, platform, and practices. Designbetter.co is really all about serving the practices portion, right? So there are times where people and platform are woven into some of the stories or podcasts or workshops that you'll see delivered through designbetter.co. But the entire purpose is to teach that carpenter how to swing that hammer with as much efficiency as possible. So it's really just all about helping bring up the industry by evangelizing what those best practices are. And that's sometimes done from the viewpoint of some people here at Envision or some of the research that we've seen, but it's more often done with us actually reaching out to Mike's point earlier of using our network. And that places Envision more as a maven than anything else, is connecting the right people to the right person who has the information, right? Connecting the audience to the appropriate subject matter expert for whatever the topic is that you might be looking at, whether it's a designbetter.co sprints workshop and trying to figure out how to, you know, best set up design sprints at your organization, or how to best take a client through a sprint. There are workshops for that. Or if you're just trying to read up on, you know, what are design systems? Well, there's a handbook out there that, you know, we wrote with a bunch of really smart people out in the industry who have really figured it out. So the short answer is designbetter.co is all about delivering the practices component to the industry.
Yeah, it's funny. You were actually just making me think, somebody on Twitter a while back was complaining that there aren't a lot of great new design books. And as you were talking about Design Better books, like, oh, that's because Envision does them all now. Because you guys really do kind of like fill that void of design practice education. It's almost just like people forget that it's a book in that sort of regard. So there's not the old traditional like design textbooks as much anymore, but it seems like you guys have really filled that gap on the education side.
No, so I think it's a good point. Like, I think, you know, 10, 20 years ago, there were such a small amount of places you could turn to when you wanted to learn things. There were the kind of, published once a year sort of books on things like web standards or Flash or whatever, what have you. And then there were the kind of smattering of conferences that you could go to in places like San Francisco or New York or Seattle. And these were like special occasions. The conferences were special occasions, the books were special occasions. Now there's so much out there that you almost never need to go to a conference, and you almost never need to read a book, because there are ebooks out there, there are articles out there, there are tutorials out there, there are videos on YouTube. There's so much content out there that it's less of a question of is the material out there, and it's more of a question of how do I find it. And that goes back to one of the things that we try to do with, you know, all of our properties, is to just direct attention to where the best stuff is.
So we have to design better, but I'd like to understand what was the vision behind that, because I think, Adam, you're highly involved in that, and you moderate the Slack channel really well. And so I'm curious, you know, where what was the need that sort of the Design Leadership Forum was solving for Envision?
Yeah. There's a story I like to tell that's probably too long for this, but the punchline is that a lot of people who are in design leadership jobs right now didn't go to school for it. So a way that our theory was, you know, if we can just create safe spaces where people can come and share stories around similar challenges, that they'll teach each other and they'll take a little bit of that uncertainty that you might not be willing to admit. But a lot of design leaders have expressed to me that they felt this prior to coming to the forum of, you know, there's a lot of guesswork that goes into their day to day, especially as the role of a digital product design leader continues to evolve and they're doing more and more things that, again, they didn't go to school for. What better way to solve for some of that uncertainty than by just bringing people together in a safe space where we don't have any hidden agenda. Envision doesn't have any hidden agenda. We're just trying to help by connecting people so that, again, the entire industry can evolve faster, so that we can all grow faster together. So that was the entire idea. And then in February of 2018, that theory was put to the test. We launched the Design Leadership Forum to the world. We had 12 founding members who would get together again at the in-person events. And if you fast forward to today, there are over 2,000 people here in over 40 countries. We've done over 60 in-person events, dozens of online events, hundreds of hours of facilitated discussions. And the thing that we've gotten out of it, not Envision, but the industry, is that we're all making really meaningful connections and we're building trust amongst each other so that we can be more vulnerable to talk about the stuff that, quite frankly, is really hard to talk about with your colleague within company walls. But if you have a network that you can plug into, if it's curated the right way, then it's going to work. You know, it's kind of clockwork, right? And it's not just me. There's a huge team here, people that are involved in not only facilitating the dinners, but helping out with the programming, Mike being a big part of that. So, you know, the forum is really cool because it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is Design Better mostly has a Sage on Stage model, right? Where we ask people who really know a specific topic to share their knowledge with the world. And Design Leadership Forum takes a peer-to-peer approach where we just bring in people who have the same pain points in each event that we do, whether it's a dinner or an online fireside or, you know, a question of the week in the Slack community that has a specific focus on a very specific shared challenge. And all we do is we ask a member to help facilitate that discussion. And as you might imagine, you know, the first couple of minutes where everyone's a little quiet with each other, trying to figure out, you know, what everyone's agenda is, almost immediately, because the room is curated so carefully, people open up. And it's one of the best parts of my job. I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to go to so many of these dinners and just watch people connect and watch the way that they open up and see how much they teach each other. It's been a really cool journey, and it's by far one of my favorite parts of the job.
It's also one of my favorite parts of the job. Every dinner I've been at has been super, super fun, in no small part to Adam's excellent planning and participation. But like Adam said, it's kind of amazing to hear how similar people's challenges are. working across many, many different types of companies in many different geographies. I'll just give you an example. You know, one thing that comes up from time to time is a subject like, hey, there's pressure at my company to distribute our design team so that our design team isn't sitting together anymore. So designers have been sitting with engineers and product managers instead. I'm nervous about that. My team's nervous about that. What do I do? Right. And I remember the first time this happened to me, I was like, oh my, my first thought was like, oh my God, like this is the, I must be the only person this is happening to. And then lo and behold, when you get in a room full of, you know, 20, 30 design leaders and you say something like that and you ask how many people have had this happen to them, you know, half the hands go up. So it's always great to be able to discuss things like that with your peers in, like Adam said, a safe space. Like imagine if you had a very public Twitter account and you said something like, hey, my company wants to break up our design team, you know, and your peers read that, they might kind of take it the wrong way or sort of be offended that you published something like that publicly. But if you can talk about it privately with other people who have been through it before, maybe they can kind of help you out and tell you, hey, this isn't actually the worst thing in the world. It's actually a good thing. If you know how to do it correctly, and that's followed up by tips. Okay, so when you move your design team, you need to still have activities in the studio space, and you need to still have everybody reporting into a functional design org, and like you have a checklist of things that can help make a transition like that a positive thing instead of a scary negative thing. So, you know, those are the sorts of things that couldn't happen without a forum like the Envision PLF. So we're just happy to provide that sort of service to, you know, the people in our community, because we feel like it makes everybody more effective at their jobs.
So as you guys have scaled Design Better and the kind of the community in general, I'm curious what challenges you face and kind of had to overcome. Because as we know, communities have their own inherent issues.
Scale is probably the word, right? The more that you move away from a small group, you know, you go from a couple people sitting around a campfire, all of a sudden that grows into a tribe, all of a sudden that grows into, you know, a town and a city and, you know, nation. Like it, as you scale, it becomes harder to create meaningful connections. That has been the thing that I've been thinking about most. It's where I spend most of my time, is trying to figure out how can I continue to create as much value in our community investments as the communities grow.
What's a meaningful connection? What does that mean?
Great question. I would say a meaningful connection, it's a relationship where you can be vulnerable with somebody. And it's something that, you know, the DLF, going back to that, is one of the things that it's really good for is helping two people who are like-minded, who have similar challenges, to meet each other and start to form a bond so that, you know, on any given day, they can Slack each other in that Slack community and just have a chat like, hey, you know, my budget just got cut 50% for headcount and I'm growing my team. What do I do? Like this weird stuff like that, right? So if you can create a meaningful connection, then in my opinion, you've done something good for the community. Or if you can create a space where meaningful connections can be created, then you've done a good thing for the community.
Yeah, I think one thing that Adam said resonated with me there, which is like the strength of connection is kind of a big deal to us. And, you know, if you think about the concept of strong ties versus weak ties, you know, a strong tie is essentially like a, you know, a good friend who you may have dinner with every, you know, every month, or you know, that sort of level of connection. Whereas a weak tie is, you know, somebody you've connected with on LinkedIn and, you know, you wouldn't really ping them unless you needed a job or, you know, something like that. I think of kind of what we strive to create is more of like something in the middle, kind of like a medium tie, where we're introducing you to people who you want to interact with on a pretty regular basis, but certainly not daily and maybe not even weekly. One of the nice things that we've had happen with these design leadership dinners is, you know, people have a great time at them. And then when we ask for feedback on how the program is and how the dinner went and all that, a lot of people say the same thing, which is like, how do I stay in touch with these people after each event? Like, I don't want to wait until the next event. And so that was one of the reasons why Adam set up this very active Slack channel that we have. But there's certainly more that we can do there. I mean, we really want to facilitate connections amongst designers and design leaders around the world at whatever pace makes, you know, whatever pace is comfortable to people and or perhaps even a little uncomfortable. Sometimes you have to get a little outside of your comfort zone to, you know, talk to strangers and you know, and make friends with people who work at competing companies, or companies that, you know, that are in your same industry one way or another.
So I buy everything you guys are saying, but I want to ask a challenging question, because I'm curious what your all's thoughts are. But how do you know what you're doing is working for Envision?
So there's a bunch of answers to that. I think the most obvious is, you know, we try to measure as much as we can. Every time we bring in, let's say, a speaker to one of our events, we test NPS for that event. Every time we have a function of one sort or another, we survey people about how they enjoy themselves. We keep a close eye on attendance numbers, on how many people RSVP versus how many people actually show up. So there are a number of things that we can test, you know, fairly quantitatively to determine whether we're doing a good job or not. I would say there's a lot less direct testing of the effect it has on sales. So we don't do a whole lot of like, hey, we threw this event in Seattle and we now make this much more money from our customers in Seattle. Like, we don't really go to that level of kind of quantification. We just sort of have a feeling that, you know, if you do the right things for the community, success will naturally follow from it. And I think that's been true over the last several years.
I'll add on to that is Mike really touched on the quantitative side, and on the qualitative side, a way that we receive feedback that these investments are working is we are generally perceived by our customers as being a holistic partner, right? So we aren't just delivering a tool, we're delivering value as to not only even how to use the tools in the right situations, but how to just generally operate as a product design team. Right. So these community investments, they come back in a number of different ways. Mike really touched on some of the top layer ways that we can measure if these events and community investments are successful from a satisfaction standpoint. But as far as a broader lens, we are generally perceived through our clients as being a strong partner. And that's really what we're trying to go for, right? Is to be much more than just a tooling company. We want to be a partner to all of our clients as they go through their internal digital transformations and as they go to building and maturing their product design teams. We have more to offer than, you know, being a prototyping tool or a whiteboarding tool with freehand or, you know, insert the blank with any of the other things that we build on our platform side.
Right. If design remained a niche service within companies, like if design continued to be viewed as a kind of service department that was sort of subservient to the needs of, let's say, product management or engineering or marketing or any other kind of department around the company, we wouldn't be nearly as successful as we are. I think only because design has recently transformed into, you know, being a strategic partner in the modern enterprise, have we and all of our competitors been able to build. So, you know, back to the kind of tide lifts all boats thing. Like, we, it's very, very important to us that the field of design continues to be elevated in the workplace. And, you know, we just want to do our part to help ensure that happens.
So I just have one final question to ask you guys. This has been so great, and I just want to say how much we really appreciate it. It's been such a good conversation. What does better product mean to you?
My gut screams usable, accessible, and delightful. I know that might sound a little cheesy, but really it's, are you making things that people enjoy using? Right, especially with digital, you have shorter and shorter shelf lives. I think the ultimate test is, you know, is somebody using a digital product as long as they would their, you know, cast iron skillet? Like, if you can build something that has a long shelf life that maybe you can be passed down, you know, to your friends several years down the line, or friends and family, then you've done what a lot of teams, you know, I wouldn't say fail to do, but shelf life is ultimately the thing that I kind of look at, is like, how well is something working, right? I look at, I play music, and I look at great design, a great example being MIDI language. We're still using, you know, 1.0, and I think MIDI was designed in like the 80s. Like, it's still being used. That's absolutely wild. We're just coming up to MIDI 2.0. And that's a digital deliverable. You know, it's a language, but there are very few digital things that last decades. That is, in my opinion, what great design is.
I think it's a great answer. I also look at the sort of various levels of great design, you know, and my mind immediately goes to like functional, usable, delightful, right? So you have to make something functional first, something actually work. Then you have to make it usable. So do users actually understand how to operate it? And then after you've done the both of those things, you can make it delightful, which is it's actually a joy to use. But I think up until the last few years, at least in digital product design, that's kind of where it ended. And I think we're now starting to see there's a fourth pillar there that comes, you know, perhaps it should come at the start, which is essentially, is it good for the world? Is it good for your health? Is it good for the world? Like we've become very good at creating very addictive digital products that are very effective at getting people to stay on their iPhone all day, or click ads all day, or like photos all day. And you know, you have all those functional, usable, delightful qualities to the experience. But at the end of the day, what's it doing to you, and what's it doing to the world? And so I like that we're starting to kind of ask ourselves as an industry, are we paying enough attention to these sorts of things? Because I think in many cases we have created products that, you know, generously, let's say, are a mix of good and bad for people. I mean, look, I worked at Twitter, right? Like Twitter does a lot of good for the world. Probably does a lot of bad for the world too. It's good for your health in some ways. It's bad for your health in some ways. I think if we are upfront with ourselves as designers from the beginning, and we anticipate all of the potentially negative consequences of what we're building, then we can build even better design products that have potentially only positive outcomes or almost exclusively positive outcomes.
Many thanks to Adam Fry Pierce and Mike Davidson for taking the time to speak with us and share some amazing stories of how Envision is building and learning from their community. We've heard some success stories over the past few episodes of how community and product can align, but are there situations where community can make the biggest impact? What if you have a highly engaged audience, or if there's an obvious geographical tie? In our next episode, we'll introduce you to stories that highlight the power of community in situations where it is an essential element in a product's success.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.